You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hey, welcome to the show. Today's guest is Naeem, also known as Spank Rock. He's a really talented musician, and we had a great chat. Today he invited me to meet up with him at a bar in South Philadelphia. It was a really good time. We were able to talk about what it means to be successful, spirituality, and how to manage the business aspect of a creative world. Hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, so this podcast could be a little interesting for me because it's not in the typical silent environment. You've got me in a bar. We've got the music down, the air conditioning blasting, but hopefully this will... Yeah.
Is this picking you up, you
think? Yeah, I think, yeah, I've got, I'm good.
All right, cool, awesome.
So I'm going to, not that anybody really calls me, but we'll do the whole turn the cell phones quiet game.
Yeah, I got it.
And get going. So is today a work day or a non-work day for you? What would you call it?
Today is a work day.
A work day. Well, then I'm even more appreciative of you meeting with me. That's super awesome.
No problem.
So what is what's a work non-performing day feel like? Does it feel hectic?
Non-performing. Well, you know, like, I think that... I feel like every day is a work day, you know, like, because it's like, when you know, like, I'm a musician and I'm a rapper, but, like, that can turn into so many different things, so, you know, like, and so I think to be, like, truly creative, you have to be, like,
on,
always thinking about what you want to do, what the next step is, you know, so, like, how does it... But like, what does like a regular workday feel like when I'm not performing?
Yeah.
A lot of like just daydreaming, like a lot
reflection?
Of
reflection.
Not reflection so much, just being like, oh man, what do I think is like would be cool to do? You know, what's gonna make me feel good? What's gonna make me feel happy to create?
Brainstorming.
You know? Yeah, brainstorming.
Kind of, so more of the future rather than the past. So you're not reflecting, not looking back. You are thinking about the future.
Yeah, that's a work day.
Okay.
That's a work day is like when you're thinking about the past. That's you're not working.
Good call. Good, very good call.
Seriously.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it's really human nature, though. Because right now I'm reading a lot of, like, awakening and enlightenment stuff about how to be present and how the ego traps you through the past and the present and the future, and that being present is the goal. And that's really hard.
Exactly, yeah.
So do you feel really present when you're performing? I would assume.
Yeah, performing is great. I just had a performance this Saturday at Underground Arts, and it was like... It was weird for me because I wasn't happy about like the show's lineup. I wanted to have more control over it, and I didn't have control
creative
over
control.
It. Yeah, so like I was really angry a bit, but
I had to. In a mood.
Yeah, I was in a mood, so I had to step up and still do a performance.
Right.
And, so yeah, you have to be. That's about being in a moment because I had to put all of my like frustration or disappointment away
aside,
and do the best I could do. So
I'm finding that to be true because I'm like I was joking around when I first saw you just now. I'm jacked on coffee. I feel like this is going to be a good case study about how caffeine affects the brain because like I'm afraid I'm going to start talking too fast. But I know what you mean because like I just sat in traffic and I was like, this isn't the mind space that I want to be in before I really, because the whole point of this is about really having thoughtful, you know, cool, casual kind of conversations.
Yeah,
and that's something now I have to think of, which I never thought of before, you know?
Yeah.
Because when you work behind a desk or a computer, you have that shield, that protection. But you are out there so vulnerably and so real. If you're not really feeling it, I'm sure your audience can tell.
Yeah, definitely. The audience can tell.
Do you have any rituals? Do you have any things that you do before shows?
You know what? I really don't have many rituals. I like to be alone, which is also really hard for me to get alone time and after shows.
Right.
So a lot of it is just like being quiet. I don't know drinking or drugs usually before the show. I like to be like really sober so I can be aware of like the audience. And
well, reality is the craziest drug of them all.
Yeah, it's wild.
We're into it.
Yeah. You know. But it was funny, you know, Amanda Blank performed with me this Saturday, and she was like, that was one of the best performances I've seen of you recently. And I was like, I wonder why. I was like, what do you think was different about it? And she was like, I felt like you were like in the moment. She's like, I felt like you were like being open and honest and spiritual about your connection with the performance. She was like, I've seen you perform before like a machine where you know how to perform. You can do the steps and go through it. But she was like, but this one was like, it's like a step beyond. And I always think the step beyond is about having a spiritual connection with it instead of just being like,
are you a spiritual
man? A, B, C, D. Am I a spiritual man? Yeah. But I guess in a very like in a very loose way, not through like a religious,
organized,
like religious
sort of way. I feel religion and spirituality couldn't be further apart in a lot of ways. I mean, to me, and this is just me, I think of spirituality as self-defined, and religion is like group mass-defined. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think, well, I think with, you know, religion and spirituality a link, but religion is like a very guided, you know, experience through spirituality. So I think that when, you know, for example, if you go to, you know, a Baptist church or something like that, or like a big, you know, like, you know, performance-based, music-based, like super church, when people are into that emotion and they're waving their hands and dancing through the aisles and like screaming and singing, I believe that it's true spirituality. I do believe they're giving themselves a time to like separate themselves from the day-to-day lives, to open up themselves.
Because
usually people don't, it's guided, but I do think it's still like really open.
I see you're saying. It's like channeled.
Yeah. But
they're allowing
not,
themselves to be the lightning rod, I guess
exactly,
you could say. Okay.
But without the guidance, without the teacher, the preacher in the front of the group,
leader,
then I think it's hard to for an individual to really figure out how to be truly spiritual. Because a lot of times, especially in America, we can only, an individual usually can only base his or her success through like numbers and, you know, tangible things. It's really hard for an individual to go up against this world and say, I'm going to be someone who is spiritual. And recognize and have and give himself time to think about, how do I feel right now? What's going on? Where's my place in the world? And have these existential periods much going on.
I agree 1,000%. That's so where my head is at. I'd love to ask you, like, because I brought it up earlier in my show about, like, I think success is subjective. It depends on what is your litmus test? Where is your line? Is it money? Is it your parents being proud of you? Is it, you know, being cool? Is it, and there's all these different ways because, and, you know, success doesn't have to be traditional or theoretical, you know? And so what does success mean to you? Like, at what moments when you're working do you feel successful?
I think there's a couple different ways to feel successful. And I've like, sometimes I feel successful when other people say, hey, you're doing a good job. This is great, you know. Sometimes I feel successful when I look at a YouTube video or a SoundCloud and I say, oh, I got this many hits on this song.
Okay.
That's obvious, like you can gauge success that way. But there have been times where I've created something that wasn't popular, but I felt successful creatively. And I have to say, well, okay, no one else liked this, but remember how you felt when you made it. Remember you thought you felt that spiritual connection to it.
Right.
Remember that you have to gauge, and I have to remind myself that I have to engage in success through both ways, you know?
Yeah.
Be happy about when people like it and the numbers are there, but not to always be pushed around by numbers.
Right.
You know, because a lot of times in history, the people who have the most impact on creativity in the world at large are usually the people that are so far ahead that they're unpopular.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, Joan of Arc. I mean, talk about people's... I know exactly what you mean. That's a perfect example.
So it's like... it is important to say, okay, the numbers are there. Great, check that off. But more importantly, those moments where you actually feel... you know, the endorphins are flowing naturally when you feel like, oh man, I'm on to something, you know, and you feel happy about what you created, is usually when, you know, the most successful time. So,
So how do you disconnect from stress? Talking about numbers and trying
know.
To fulfill. Okay, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah, I'm still working on that one. You know, like, drinking.
Yeah, for sure. We are at a bar.
I mean, like, honestly, like, I have not drank so much in the daytime that I have this past year.
Okay.
Because it's like, and I'm not drinking like heavily.
Sipping.
Coming down to 12 steps and like being in the complete dark when like it's beautiful days outside and I'm sitting and thinking and writing and, or, you know, emailing or putting things in motion and having a drink. This is the most I've ever done that. I'm not really a drinker, like in a way that like I want to drink every day. But it's like, it's hard, man, trying to find like peace of mind and being like, okay, you're gonna get through this. And sometimes me like breaking the rules of society mm-hmm. makes me feel better about, it gives me confidence, you know?
Okay.
Being like, I can do whatever I want to do.
Okay.
So
do you associate confidence with calmness? Like when you gain that feeling of confidence, it actually takes anxiety down? Is that one of your ways of dealing?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I think most anxiety comes from fear, like fear and unconfidence, you mm-hmm. know? It's like, you know, because like, it's one thing to have like butterflies in your stomach. Mm-hmm. Then there's another thing, that usually happens when I have to go on stage.
Right,
you know?
Nerves.
Yeah, but there's another thing to be completely, stopped dead in my tracks through like anxiety
and
feeling like I'm forced. I have to push to get myself up out of bed and to put things in motion. Mm-hmm. A very simple task, you know.
But the thing, when I love that I'm bringing up, is because everybody feels like that, and I want to know how does your mind get through it? How does your mind process it? How do you make success out of it?
It's really difficult. Like I try to think what I do. Sometimes I allow myself to just be down in the dumps, and then two or three days later, I'm like, all right, dude, like, you know how much catching up you have to do?
Right.
Like, you better get your ass out of bed. And I know it's a horrible way to work. I'm not working like a machine, you know. I have friends that, like, work like machines, and you can see their success. Like, the more you work at what you do, the more successful you're going to be. It's just that simple. There's no tricks to it at all.
Okay. Just volume.
Yeah, but for me, it's like when I'm struggling to pull myself out of like being mopey and in the dumps, you know, mm-hmm. that's two or three days of me not working,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the guilt of that after 3 days is what makes me snap out of it.
Ah, I see. Okay.
I would much rather be able to deal with the anxiety day to day
than
just go to work.
Right.
I think it's building habit, I think is a really strong thing to do.
Okay.
If you have a habit, if you can do something, you know, to build a new habit, they say you have to do something like, I think, 12 days, like 2 weeks in a row, something
like
that.
It's like 21, it's like 7 to build a bad, I think it's like 21 to build a new good
habit. Yeah, exactly.
It's really hard. It's like up the hill backwards.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're able to do that, and I truly believe in that. I wanted to start making my bed every day,
mm-hmm.
and I had to do it 21 in a row.
Yeah.
Now I make my bed every day.
Yeah.
Now I can't leave the house without making my bed,
yes.
which is a nice, good habit to
yes.
have, you know. But I have to do that with writing music now, you know, like
mm-hmm.
I just moved my studio, out of my house because mm-hmm. I wasn't getting good work done.
Okay.
So
Fishtown. But it's also good on you for recognizing I'm not getting work done. I have to break this. That takes, because I think the making the bed, it's self-love. I think recognizing that you're in a bad pattern, self-love, wanting to, the will to try something new. I love this. So I call it self-love. You're just looking after you.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of babying you, being the mom or dad of yourself. That's what I sometimes call it. Do what needs to get done.
Definitely.
Well, you were mentioning habits. I want to know about structure. How does a year go for you? Is it planned? Like, is there a percentile of shows, percentile of albums, percentile of collaborative work with other people, DJing? Mm-hmm. Do you break it out, or do you just wake up every day and it's just a chaos of just excitement and creativity?
Yeah, for me it is, chaotic. I think, especially now that I'm putting out music on my own, mm-hmm. and, there's a lot of, since I'm in a driver's seat of the creative side and also the business side,
mm-hmm.
is I don't have the same amount of structure that I used to. It's literally like a crazy person trying to mm-hmm. Wear both of these hats. It's almost impossible. When I did have record labels, like there was a structure there that things had to be turned in a certain time.
Okay.
And you knew when you turned it in, then the machine was going to start working.
Right.
You're going to be on tour for this amount of time. You're going to do this. Now everything is like based on my own, my own
vision.
Vision. So it's like, if I want to tour, I have to figure out, who I'm going to tour with. It's everything, and it's tough not having structure, because I'm bouncing between being a businessman who is a good businessman is extremely structured and
mm-hmm.
pays attention to numbers and the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Artists don't do that.
It's the last thing on their mind. So you're juggling left and right brain.
Right. For me to do that. And it's tough. I'm not a businessman at all.
So
I'm learning.
You didn't get into this because you were a businessman. You got into this because you're an artist.
Exactly.
And now you're going and doing this thing that you never, claimed to be good at. And now you have to be really good at it to keep the machine going.
Yeah. So learning to be, learning business and also trying to make sure that the thinking about business doesn't affect the way that I create music,
right,
is probably the stupidest thing I could have ever done. And so, and it creates a greater chaos,
right,
than
because you're feeding
before.
Two different animals.
Yeah, and I'm also in control of it. So, you know, so it's like the anxiety of being in control,
right,
and two different, you know,
yeah,
sides of thinking,
well,
creates a very kind of
that
chaotic
being said,
space.
You're saying you're in this new dimension, you're in this new identity, a new element of your own, you know, mission of making music. Have you discovered along the way any business or structured people, non-artists, that you now look up to? Because you're like, shit, now I know what goes into it. This guy or this girl really knows what's going on because they're pulling it off. They're doing the business stuff, the smart business, the creative thinking. Because creative thinking, that's why I want to interview people, not just artists. Because creative thinking goes into so much more. So have you found any business type people that you aspire to or you look up to?
You know, like, honestly, I haven't. Not yet,
not
you know.
Yet.
I think that it's going to take some time for me to be like, okay, I am a businessman. Yeah. I think right now I don't really want to...
Right. You're denial.
I don't really, no, I'm in denial, you know. But I think there will become a point in time where I become more interested in finding mentors in business. And
okay,
when you say having a creative mind, like, yeah, I think doing smart business is a very creative space, too. And I think that's why I can... could probably be good at it, but you have to remove the emotion from business, you know.
Ooh,
in the arts, you need the emotion.
That's so well put, because I feel like that's a challenge for a lot of people. I sometimes don't even know how to process the world without the filter of emotion. You know what I mean? I almost don't even know what that looks like sometimes. And do you think you're capable of eliminating emotion? I mean, I don't see you as overly emotional to the point where it's a problem, but just you are passionate and you're emotional. And like you said, that black and white view set on the world is supposedly the way to go with business. Do you think you're into it?
I think that, I don't know. It's like it's kind of like when people argue like the creation story, you know, like.
Mm.
Like if you know, like you know, science versus like the like religion in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, the science is there; it's factual.
Yeah.
You know, it is the best we know how to say that this is an absolute fact.
Yes,
and that's what business is. You're dealing with math. it's all factual. It's all facts. You know, it's like numbers. You know,
And the other side's all about faith.
And sometimes it's hard for you to, like, say, you know what, like, I'm being idealistic, you know, like, all, like, the facts are right there in front of me, you know, like, I need to just pay attention to that. It takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah.
And it also removes, like, any sort of error. And I think the error and emotion usually is what kind of, like, sparks the greatest, you know, it sparks the greatest, like, creative ideas.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to have some sort of wild faith and freedom and lean into the chaos for the arts, but and allow yourself to kind of, but that's just only in the creative space. You should allow yourself time to be chaotic and free.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the magic happens, capture it, put the lid on it, push it aside, and then say, okay, now let's go into the business world. Now that we have this thing, you know, how are we going to make this work, or how are we going to present this to people?
Right.
And what we're going to invest in it, and be very black and white about it.
Yeah.
This is how much money we have. This is how much we can put into it safely. I would love to be able to sit with, you know, people who are, you know, really business-minded and have that control over money and numbers in a way that's responsible. Because that's all it is, just being responsible.
Right.
And realizing that the facts are the facts. And being able to say, okay, we're in fact time now.
Right.
Not the creative time now.
Now, is it an issue of budget? Like, if you had all the money in the world, would you hire someone or to do this? Or is it genuinely the owning the creative vision and having the say is more important and actually outweighs the drama or the frustration of running the business side?
If I had all the money in the world, I would have I would team up with someone to, like, you know, be the business guy.
You know? Okay.
I think the reason why I'm in the position of, like, you know, being my own label was because of my experiences and needing to have, like, complete creative freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this says it in every contract I ever sign, it's never the case. And it feels better to kind of, like, It feels better to say that I know that I'm in complete control of my own destiny.
For sure.
However, it's not the smartest thing to do all the time. Sometimes it's like really egotistical and say, I want to be in control of everything. You can put yourself in a tough position. I would love to have someone who I could hire to help guide me through, you know, the business.
Well, right. I mean, I'm in a constant search of a mentor. Are you kidding? Like, mentorship is fantastic if you can find it. Sometimes the universe doesn't really allow it on every moment.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about personality. Do you consider you an introvert, extrovert? What do you categorize yourself? I'm forcing you to label yourself.
I don't know. I used to be pretty introverted and really quiet, you know. But I would hang out with really loud, extroverted people.
You were there to balance it out.
Yeah. And so I think over time, I felt pressure to feel like I have to be on show all the time because all my friends are, and like, and I'm a performer and I'm supposed to be, you know, like, sharp and witty and funny and always on.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. And I hope I can, like, kind of go back to just being, like, you know, quiet, dorky kid. We're just like, what's up with him? What's up with him?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you know, for sure.
But still have all my cool friends, like, vouching for me, you know?
You gotta keep the rep.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
I like being introverted. I like being quiet. I think that you can learn a lot more that way. I think that's how I learned in the past.
Okay.
Just watching and listening to people.
Okay. So speaking of quiet, do you meditate? Have you ever gotten into that at all?
I've tried to meditate recently. Okay. I really like it. I think it's a really tough thing. The thing about habits, you know, like I remember when I was having a really tough time this year, I said, all right, let me try meditation because I was in LA. This guy did this, like, you know, we were like, did this like meditation over top of some like sitting on the edge of like this big hill in Malibu. And it was like, this beautiful environment. Did a meditation. I felt great afterwards. And I was like, wow, this is something that I should probably try to do. So I come back to Philly. Meditating, you know, in my apartment, not having this beautiful green, like, view and, like, fresh air or whatever.
Yeah.
And it becomes another habit, a hard habit to create, you know. And to be able to not hit a wall with it, where I meditated, like, 7 days in a row. And I remember the last 2 days, I didn't feel the same relief from it as I did the first 3 days, you know.
Okay.
And I think it was just about, like, well, yeah, it felt great the first 3 times. Now you have this period where this is the work, you know. You have to work past, you know.
Right, totally.
And so, like,
it's plateauing way. I mean, you think same thing goes with like running or cycling.
Exactly.
You know, your muscles will plateau and you won't get the endorphins for the same, you gotta switch it up.
Right, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Muscle confusion.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
mental confusion. Oh, I like this this idea, because I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotta, you know, trip yourself up to excite your brain about like getting the payoff. I totally know what you mean.
Yeah.
I've just recently gotten into meditating. I tend to, I think of it as like preventative care. And I've noticed that you do it and then you feel great for a few days and then you slip and you gotta catch up and do it again. And
right.
I guess it makes me feel grateful when I do it when I need it in that way. So I let life kind of, I'm in a balanced place. I let life get chaotic and then I balance it out. So you feel it. I should do it every day. I think what you're talking about, that daily 7 day thing is really ambitious and worthwhile.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think if I could have got past the hump, you know, the tough period, maybe made it through creating this new habit, like, what is it, 21 days?
Yeah, something like, yeah, exactly.
Like, if I could have gotten it to that point, then I would have a habit of meditating every day. I think it would be helpful, you know. And I know a lot of very successful people that, you know, swear by meditation, and people I really respect who meditate every day. I think it's... And people who are like killing, you know, they're killing a game, you know.
Right,
and I think
right.
it's like something that we should all try to figure out how to do.
For sure, because I was always worried for a while that success and ego, and when I say ego, I don't necessarily mean like the psychological. I mean like narcissism, ego, is what it took to be successful. I'm sure you must run across some big-headed, narcissistic people out there in your work.
Yeah, of course.
Do you think that that's an important attribute? Like, what about that do you think makes people successful? Do you think the narcissism is maybe like a shield to protect themselves, or confidence is their tool?
It's definitely, you know, This is a really tough question because, like, narcissism is something that you initially want to look down upon.
Mm-hmm.
However, you do have to be narcissistic to focus such, like, time and effort on an idea. You know, like, it's like, you know, being a painter and saying, I want to paint this thing or I want to use this color, mm-hmm. and you're trying to work it until it's the most perfect, beautiful thing. Like, you know, anyone can come by and say, what are you doing? You're wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a narcissist to say, no, like, this idea that I have is a great idea,
mm-hmm.
and I want to focus all mm-hmm. my time and effort on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the other side of it, is that people can use it in a very, you know, become narcissistic in a very negative way,
mm-hmm.
where they are only focused on it, on their own, you know, selves and their own advancements, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
mm-hmm.
but then they turn into, you know, they start as narcissists and turn into like sociopaths.
Oh, right.
You know?
Right.
And that's like, that's a different thing. So
yeah, for sure.
Narcissism, I think, is always going to be there with art and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So
speaking of, like, to me, that's the segue to, like, moods, you know, like, what kind of moods that you're in. Do you feel like you have to be as creative as you are and to be out there all the time? Do you find that, like, as success grows, that, like, your moods become more extreme because you're seeing more extreme scenarios than the average person who just goes to a desk job every day? Do you know what I mean?
I think so. I really don't believe that anyone's like the stress and like anxiety of people's lives. I think they're very common. You know, I think people can feel it.
Mm.
I think sometimes, like, if you don't know the other person's like full story,
mm-hmm.
then you can make assumptions of
mm-hmm.
like, you know, what they're dealing with. So I don't think that, like, I wouldn't say that because I've experienced more things, like, move around a lot,
mm-hmm.
that my stress or anxiety is, like, greater
okay.
than,
I like
you know,
that. I'm
the
glad.
Person
yeah.
who has to wake up every day and go
mm-hmm.
and do a job that
right.
is, like, a trained job. Because eventually, like, it's, I don't know, I think it's really just about who's working hard. There are people that work really hard.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that don't work hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at someone like Beyonce, you know, she is a hard worker, as obvious,
yes.
you know. But then there are single mothers that work just as hard every day, you
mm-hmm.
know. And it's a different, you know, they don't have their skill of, like, being organized and in sacrifice
mm-hmm.
isn't obvious because it's not on display with lights and costumes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, being regimented and having to work and having this duty and sticking to your duty every single day,
mm-hmm.
I think it's something that, you know, hard work is, like, I think that's an issue of, like, being a hard worker, not an issue of, like,
right.
You know,
no,
where your life is taking you.
For sure,
like, yeah.
for sure. So you were talking about travel. What's your, like, one of your favorite places to travel?
I don't know. I like Paris a lot. It's very pretty.
Yeah.
I like London. London's a really
my favorite
funny,
too.
Like, exciting city. It's really, I don't know. It's almost cartoony in a way. It's like,
I think they would say that about us.
Yeah.
They think America's just one big television show.
I don't know, man. They're definitely like, I don't know, man. Fashion there and
yeah.
music and like.
Totally.
It's just the way they talk and interact with each other. It's still, like, bold and, like,
I know. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so I wanted to ask you, because the other question felt a very, very, like, trite and basic interview. I want to ask something a little bit different. What is, like, the most culture shock you've ever experienced, where you show up and you're just like, what are these people on? Or, like, I don't get it. Or, like, either you're being not appreciated or maybe overly appreciated. It's just this vibe thing that you're just really sitting back and taking account versus just flowing right into it.
Yeah. I think it was... It's funny. It's probably two. One is when I first went to Japan,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like I felt like I landed on a different planet.
Mm-hmm. That's how I imagine it for me when I go to yeah, yeah. I haven't been yet.
It's just, you know, the language is so different. Yeah. The letters are different. Mm-hmm. So it's really a big adjustment, you know. Mm-hmm. That was culture shock. And plus it's over the top. It's like, you know, New York, but...
Right,
you know,
right, right.
Because
their
crazy.
Culture, their commitment to design and doing something well, I mean, they yeah. take something and they run with it.
Yeah, it's wild. So just like, it's just too much going on. I was afraid to, you know, in Japan, and I was in Osaka as well, they have like small streets that are kind of windy, kind of like a, you know, spider webs out on a grid, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid to like walk like 3 blocks from my hotel because I was like, I'm going to get lost. Yeah, you know, yeah. I can't read the words. I'm not going to be able to get back.
Right,
you
right.
Because I'm like fucking pussy like that. I don't know.
I'm terrible with geography as well. I get lost in a paper bag. Yeah.
But then the other time, I had like really big culture shock. Uh-huh. Was actually going out on tour in America with Kesha.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, we're in the middle of America, and we're like,
it felt, you know, different. Like,
yeah, it felt. I was like, whoa, like I was like, this is
where.
It was like a 40-city tour.
Wow.
So like,
I thought usually, you were gonna like name a specific town, America.
Well, usually when I, you know, when I perform or when I go on tour, it's just like the major markets. It's the East Coast, West Coast.
Right.
But in her tour, she's going in every state pretty
she's
much.
She's weaving in and
know?
Out.
If
wow.
you get this, hit these small towns. And I'm sorry, I don't have like specifics.
No, it's
like,
fair.
It was a long time ago. So.
No, but you're saying it's happened, but it was more than one, so that's why. It was a collective of places within the U.S.
Yeah, well, we were going to the, you know, like major cities in every state, and you start getting into the middle of America, start getting into the South,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like, whoa, like these people on, this is like a trip, you know, yeah. and you have like these moms bringing out their daughters to yeah. go see Kesha, and the show's raunchy, and like,
yeah.
it's very homogenous, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, it's, mostly white women and like gay white men and
okay.
like but you're in like, I don't know, like Nevada or something, just like, well, these people, I don't know, just it was a really different look of like of America. It was the experience of America that I've never experienced before.
That's cool.
Because you know how we can, you know, when you get into your certain scenes and
Absolutely.
pockets, you can just stay in your scenes and pockets and find them across the country. But
I completely
like,
agree. I didn't realize how big America was until I moved away. You know, living in England and then seeing this massive country,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I never felt it before living here.
Yeah.
It was leaving that made me really realize. Now that I'm back, I like traveling around the U.S. in ways that, discovering it, because mm-hmm. it's so massive, and you're right. So that will lead me to my last question about, because you claim Baltimore, Baltimore's home.
Yeah.
You know, you love it. I see you saying things like greatest city on earth. That's awesome.
But you know, someone else is talking about the greatest city in America, but like, I'm saying that it's kind of a joke, but
I
believe it, but it's kind of a joke because, you know, on the bus stops there, the benches for the bus,
mm-hmm.
it says greatest city in America.
Oh, okay. So it's like an inside joke to Baltimore
yeah.
people.
So it's like, yeah. So
I didn't take any offense to it, but I just right. thought, but you must get something out of being in Philadelphia because,
yeah,
you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's your quasi home base for the time being, and it's been for a little
sure.
while.
I've been here for 13 years.
Okay.
You know, when I left Baltimore, I had to leave Baltimore because it wasn't much opportunity there
mm-hmm.
For me anyway.
Right.
And it wasn't until I left and found a new scene, then I was able to go back to Baltimore and find that scene that existed in Baltimore.
Very
you know?
Common story. I think the leaving yeah. and coming back is definitely a thing. It's been a repeated yeah. story through history. I know
yeah.
exactly how you feel.
Yeah. You know, it's like, especially the city so segregated
mm-hmm.
that like, you know, like growing up like black and like lower middle class in Baltimore on the west side, and then going to a prep school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like, okay, I like knew like rich white kids or like I met like Sikhs and like,
mm-hmm.
you know, Koreans and like things like I had a diverse upbringing, but it wasn't through an artistic way. It was in a very like,
huh.
it was
socially.
Socially is really based about like income and, it was all race oriented. It wasn't
okay.
really this creative space, you know.
Right, right. I see.
It wasn't
saying.
Until I left and found the creative pockets that I was able to be like, "What's Micah?" I didn't even know what Micah was when I was growing
oh,
up.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
And then I say, "Oh, there's an art school in Baltimore that's like a great art school,
yeah, it's
and like
really great, yeah.
the kids are making some of the best music in this
yeah.
like little scene." Like,
yeah, that's funny.
But it was just because the city's so segregated. I wouldn't have, you know, like
right.
how would some black kid from West Baltimore like find that scene,
right,
you know?
Right, right, right. No, I get it.
So like, it's,
well, this show might, this first, if I break it into seasons, might turn in you know, I'm just using the context that I have, the really creative people in my world, it's going to probably just turn into one big tour of creative minds in Philadelphia, because that's just, I'm just starting with what I know and who I know. And so if you wanted to, you know, if you want to talk at all about, like, some of the joys, some of the, maybe even some of the disappointments of Philadelphia that you experienced creatively.
Oh, yeah. Philly's great because I think to be creative, you need to have, like, you need to have your mentors and teachers, so you need to have really smart people. Mm-hmm. And Philly is great because you have these great universities. You have UPenn, you have Temple, Drexel now has, like, you know, a really amazing music program. And if you can get into those scenes with people that have these knowledge can teach you, it's great. But if you can also have the luxury of space, like creative space, meaning like
you don't mean real estate.
Well, real estate, but also just like not being caught. If you can make it that you don't get caught in the when everyone's thinking the same way.
You know,
the collective consciousness.
My collective consciousness, I know. Exactly.
So it's like, you know, in New York, I've noticed in New York when I started hanging out with a bunch of like fashion like people, I heard a couple friends say one thing, I'm really into this. And then I would go into another circle and I would hear that same thing again. And I could say, oh, that's going to be the next trend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these two different scenes are saying that they're into the same thing.
Right.
That creates trend. It doesn't really create true creative moments.
Okay.
So to have a space to be out of the, you know, collective consciousness, but still be aware of it, and also still have people who are mentors and actually, like, smart, historical people, then you can have a great space for creating. That's what I love about Philadelphia.
What
I love about Philadelphia is that you have like the mental space, and you also have, you know, it's fairly cheap to live here compared to like New York or LA.
That's what I meant about the retail. You have a space to work.
And that's really important too.
Yeah.
But you do need an environment that's pushing you to want to work, you know.
Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I think the statistic is Philadelphia has more art schools per capita than any other major city in the U.S. And I think that is a byproduct. We all go to school here and then we stick around. I mean, there's just a lot of genuine creative thinkers around.
I
see Philadelphia as a highly creative city.
Yeah, definitely. But I think the hardest thing is getting people to stay in Philly because it's so close to New York.
Right.
You can, like, just go and... And it's no real like business here.
Right. I know what you mean. Okay, well, let's just wrap it up because I feel like people are coming in. I really appreciate your time. And it was super awesome chatting with you. And good luck on your future projects.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. It's super fun.
Good, I'm glad. Okay.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.